welcome to podcast number 13. Today's guest is Gaz Mayall. He's the son of British blues legend John Mayall. Gaz is a promoter, he's a DJ, he's a singer, a musical historian, and he's a dandy. And he runs a venue, Gaz's Rockin' Blues in Soho, and he puts on acts as well at Glastonbury, at the Rocket Lounge, and he performs with his band, the Trojans. On today's podcast, Gaz Mayall talks about the notorious Colony Club in Soho, modelling for Lucian Freud, gardening for Bez from the Happy Mondays, and hunting game with a bow and arrow. Has it always been the fedora and the braces, you know, right from the start? Because I'm trying to imagine you as a new romantic with the sort of spiky dyed hair and stuff. And
no, I never got round to that. Maybe if I hit a midlife crisis and discover the missing me that missed the opportunity first right time round, then you may have something to be worried about. But right now, not so far so good, I should say. But you know, not so far I've been involved in that.
Because I go to whatever festivals in Glastonbury, and Gaz is there. He's either wherever, Port Elliot, Glastonbury, and he's always got some nice clothes on, and I'm wearing functional stuff like kind of commando pants and sort of waterproof trousers and stuff. And there's a bit of me that is really annoyed that Gaz Mayall's walking around looking dead cool, and he's got maybe brogues on and he's got white trousers, you know, in a field. I'm thinking, suicide man, you know. But still, he cuts a figure, he cuts a dash, and he introduces us every now and again on a stage. But I can remember, I think I met you at the Colony Club years and years ago.
Quite likely, yeah. That was a great little spot. That was a proper little Soho dive started by Muriel Belcher in 1948. And she used to... Can I swear on this?
You can swear.
Well, I'm just quoting Muriel Belcher. See, her catchphrase when people walked in was, "Oh, hello, cunty," and that was the Colony Club, and she left there, I think, in the early 80s, or she died or something, and then her head barman took over, and for many years after he died, his bronze bust of his head, hollow inside, obviously, contained the man's ashes, and that was kind of on the mantelpiece there in the club. It was a really interesting place, kind of artistic. Well, right up your street.
I was excited to be asked to come down and play there. I can't remember
how you performed. Brilliant.
Yeah, we
could have been Keith Allen, probably. He was another big fan of that and a regular of the place. And I don't know, or maybe you were down there before you met Keith, or maybe that's where you met Keith.
No, I met Keith back at a Linton and Lynmouth festival. I think it was called the Llama Festival.
Yeah.
And he turned up, Tom Hodgkinson, who runs the Idler magazine, he kind of put him on to come and see me. And I think I went down to, he turned up and we had to go and play this gig about kind of a half a mile down this road. And he said hello, and then he just grabbed me bags and he carried me bags right to the stage. And he was just chatting, and he's got me bags, and I'm thinking, that's really sweet. But I'd met him at Glastonbury maybe 2 years before that, and I'd seen him at he was at a bar, and I went up to him and I said, "Oh, I remember you. I saw you in Leeds back in 1981, and you played, I think, the City Varieties. And you were a beautiful young man. You had a mohair, you had a Crombie coat on, you had this beautiful suit on, you looked immaculate, and you've lost it." he was really nice. And then I said, "And I'm Mick Artistic, and I have a band, and here's the CD." Oh, it's 2007 it was. Ah. And I said, "Here's a CD." And I held it to him, and he went, "How much is it?" And I said, "No, you can have it." He said, "No, it's your music." So he paid me £7 for the... And I was really sort of touched by his gallantry and by his good manners.
Yeah.
And after that, he kind of... he gave me gigs at various... down in Stroud. And he'd always say, "Ah, match," and I'd say, "No." but he'd go straight down the cash point, and he'd come up and he'd just hand me the money.
Yeah.
And he was really obliging, you know. But he'd be a bit annoyed. "Ah, what? Yes, what? You're vegetarian, are you? Read the fucking guard, you know." I said, "Yeah." He says, "You fucking, you know." But then he'd do me a lovely breakfast.
Yeah.
And he put me, he'd give me his. I went down there and I stayed at his house, and I'd broken my arm about a month beforehand, and I had a gig to do down there. And I had it strapped up, so he gave me him and his wife's bedroom to sleep in. That's the best view of the fucking Avon house. And I got up in the morning, and there was scrambled eggs and tomatoes, and he went off and got a paper for me, and he was just really
fantastic.
So you know, he's a, probably yeah. He's due a.
He's not like that with everyone, by the way.
No, I imagine.
Doesn't take fools lightly. He likes who he likes, and then you know, but he's. You know where you stand with him.
Yeah,
well, he's a big fan of yours, that's for sure.
Well, I'm talking to him, I think, in maybe a week or two's time or something.
Oh, he loves some anecdotes.
Oh, sure. Yeah. But anyway, I'm kind of just looking at some of the stuff, because I just know you from, like, you booked us at the St. Moritz Club at the Rocky Blues Club.
Residency in Soho, yeah. Well, had until this bloody COVID thing put a damp blanket on it.
Yeah.
Trying to put the fire out.
So what makes you get up on a morning with your red brace and your hat then, if the club's shut and the festival's gone and there's no, like, kind of nightclubs on it, no place to DJ? Or is there a place to DJ?
Guess what I'm doing tonight then? I'm celebrating my 40th anniversary again. Well, it officially turned 40 on the 3rd of July, because I opened in 1980. But I'm doing, because I can't do one massive big thing that I'd normally do to mark the occasion and a big Thursday night to celebrate the thing. This year I've been kind of doing a few events to celebrate the 40th. And tonight we're at Waterman's Art Centre. It's in Brentford near Kew, London, by the Thames.
So this is, you're celebrating Gaz's Rocking Blues.
Yeah, Gaz's Rocking Blues.
Because it was always a Thursday night, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, so I opened on the Thursday night down there. But it's basically a sound system based on the old-fashioned kind of dance halls, and it's and basement shebeens, you know, late-night clubs. I like, similar to the clubs in the early 60s, used to have loads of them then, you know, Bag of Nails, Flamenco, Marquee. St. Moritz was actually going then at that time. Mangrove, loads of them all over town. But, you know, Soho was particularly rife with it. It was like Club Central. And
now they're all gone now then?
There's virtually nothing left of it. St. Moritz is one of the only ones left standing there, borderline closed not too long ago. There's a couple of little ones that don't have live music, too small for that, like Trisha's. Jerry's has the odd stand-up person in there, but they're not open to the general public. That's kind of real hardcore members sort of little thing, and that's quite small. But yeah, most of the regular music venues, clubs, Madame Jojo's and that, they're all gone.
Madame Jojo's, I think I've been.
Gossips went. I mean, there was tons of it around there. When I started in the 80s, there was tons of places where bands could play and where DJs could, you know, apply their trade and everything, and now it's.
Because you started as a musician, you started with the band Trojans, was it?
I started playing live, my original band, in 1982. We were going a couple of years, and then took a couple of years off and worked out what I was going to do and the direction and everything, and that's when I started the Trojans in the mid 80s.
So did you write your own stuff then?
Oh, yeah, I've got my own record label. Still writing, we're still playing.
So do you read music?
No, I can't read it, no. But there's people in the band, if you need to score stuff, you know, can do that.
Oh, yeah. And I was looking, it's got, you described it as Celtic ska in music.
Well, that's one of our angles. We made a single right there when we first started called Gaelic Ska. And that did really well, and it kind of defined a new kind of avenue.
Have you got Celtic roots in your family? Are you Irish or something?
I did my DNA once, which sounds really embarrassing, but it said I've got Scottish roots that go back 24,000 years beyond some of the most recent ice ages. Well, I thought that was quite fun. I don't know how they worked that one out. But I went to, we had an Irish lodger when I was a kid, and he took me to see the Dubliners in 1967. I was blown away. But also my best mate up the road, Paul Crowley, his family were all Irish, and we used to get shipped off to, well, flew over in one of those old-fashioned propeller aeroplanes to Sligo out in the country. Yeah, they didn't even, you know, proper old-school island. And you go into market day on the back of a tractor, and, you know, with all the pigs and sheep and stuff in front of you, and you go into a local pub, you'd be sitting on someone's lap when you're kind of fucking like 6, 7, 8 years old, and they're all having their knees up, violins coming out, and the baran and all the rest of it. So I just really soaked up that, you know, the beauty of that kind of like wild, ancient, traditional musical heritage and culture. And I just was totally in love with it. I mean, I grew up with the blues at home.
Obviously, yeah, because your dad's John
Mayall. My mum was into jazz and, you know, progressive jazz, and it was always like...
Was she a musician then as well?
She was like top grade piano, but she never took it up. I think my dad was the only real musician in the family. We always had a piano there.
Yeah.
She was, her line in the arts was pottery and a sculptor.
So what kind of pottery was she like?
Well, she used to teach pottery, but she made sculptures, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Now, my girlfriend, she does works in porcelain, and she did some pots last night, and she just sent me a little picture. She's got a wheel going last night.
Yeah, wonderful thing to do.
Yeah, she. I was just interested because my dad played the pipes. He did. My dad was from quite close to Sligo Place. He played County Leitrim, and I was born there.
Wow.
And my dad played six instruments, and so he was like a concert flute player, and played the fiddle, the accordion, the tin whistle, and he played in the Leitrim Cayley band. And
my mother
is a fiddle player, and she was recording. She was playing the accordion about a week ago. She's 87, and I've got this recording on my phone. It's a diddle 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 diddle, you know, she's just, her fingers are just dancing over the keys. So it's in the DNA, but I kind of,
you're reinterpreting a different way.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, so I'm just, I'm intrigued.
Well, you've got the bard in you, you see, which is an important facet of it, you know. You know, your way of looking at the world and interpreting it through words and to music. So, you know, it's all there, but, you know, you've just come out with a voice instead, a different voice.
Yeah, in the early 80s, I was wandering around Clerkenwell with brown paper bags, doing portraits on bags and drawing McGowan and drawing Zodiac Mind Warp and Paul Weller and stuff. Yeah. And I'd be in and out of the Fleet Street cafes on a night time, earning. I used to sleep on Mind Warp's floor. He put me up, he did. And I'd go to these like parties. There was squats across at Mount Pleasant and around the post office there. And I'd like 4 months drawing people like Jimmy Miller and just all these bizarre, Nick, you know, there's people wondering, there's like one of the Cray cousins there. And I got him, and but I just wandered in, and I'd find these people at 3 o'clock in the morning in a cafe having a subsidised meal. There they were, 3 o'clock, in the warm, and he might be a painter, but he's in a suit that was like kind of his only item. It looks like that's the only thing he's got in his wardrobe, one suit. And he'd have an amazing story about, I'm an oil painter, but you can't do oil painting in this country because you need to have a roaring fire behind you.
Yeah.
You know, So I wandered around that area, and it was a really kind of intense and fascinating period. So the early 80s in London, lots of power and lots of really interesting people.
Yeah, well, it was still coming down off the back of Maggie's Britain, and it was still a strong feeling of kind of rebellion, you know, that was all through the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, poor man fighting back and having a voice, and, you know, better must come, and that kind of spilled over through the 80s until kind of like yuppiedom, kind of like, and, you know, the new Labour and, you know, Tory revival sort of thing. But the 80s was quite a, you know, creative time. I don't know if it was as creative as the 60s. A lot of my kind of music and interest kind of go back, that were probably kind of sparked off in that era.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was all post-war. You know, we were rewriting the world in that time, and we're still kind of on waves generated from you know, the post-war era, kind of like never again and all that kind of thing. And
I'm older than you, but I can remember sort of when we moved over from Ireland to England, we moved to Leeds. There was an Irish, I'm the eldest of seven, and we moved in. We had like a cellar and we had a room above, but we stayed in the cellar and we had a big range, and my mother would have like music while you work on this, and there'd be like Edmundo Ross on, and David Whitfield or somebody, you know, and I'd soak this up, and then Billy Cotton's band show, and then after that, then we got sort of Brian Matthews and Jimmy Edwards,
with a moustache, right?
Yeah. But there was a DJ, Jimmy. Anyway, so there was an awful lot of stuff going on. You know, it was exploded, the amount of stuff, visually, sartorially. The Angry Young Men, the amazing writers, there's people like Sheila Delaney doing A Taste of Honey, and there was the French New Wave and stuff.
Poor Karen.
There's and the Pretty Things and bloody
Toby Sanford. Yeah, loads of good stuff going on there.
So I mean, the 80s was probably, it was just really interesting being at the time when there was like the, I think Whopping was going on or something in
what was happening?
When the newspapers were being, there's a big sort of things were going on about strikes and stuff in the sort of early 80s. Fleet Street got sort of changed around and stuff. I digress.
The little tangents are all relevant.
Yeah, so you're saying that, you know, you're celebrating 40 years. So how are you going to celebrate? What will you be doing physically? Are you going to be playing records?
So there's no live audience allowed in the place. We haven't even got a guest list. It's all socially distanced filming, but using this theatre stage. I think Waterman's itself has been like trying to kind of reinvent itself for this during the pandemic so it can survive. And so they're looking at different groups of people that can kind of put on an interesting show that can work within the confines of kind of live streaming virtual kind of events, parties.
So there'll be performers on tonight in this
so
space
I've got
be filmed
coming up from Southampton. I've got is it Portsmouth or something? No, Southampton. I've got the Black Cat Boppers, a four-piece rock and roll rockabilly band that are absolutely awesome.
Did they do Port Elliot?
They've done that. They've done, you know, Glastonbury for me a couple of times, and they've played all over. They're really popular now. They've done all right in the States. They're on the up and up. They've got this great black singer called Roy Phillips, who I call the hippopotamus of rock and roll, because when he opens his mouth, he's like, "Jaws come up there," and the teeth, and the roar and the glee and the glint in his eye. It's just, he's got a fabulous voice. Great entertainers, you know, big muscles, tattoos.
I think I've seen him at the Ace of Clubs, I remember. Yeah.
Upright bass, and, the bass really gives it some licks. And Colin Owens on a stand-up drum, a bit like what a Stray Cats used to have for a drum kit, and really great guitarist. We've got this French guitarist who's like got all the licks, so they're really entertaining. They're going to be playing, and I've got another band, I think eight or nine piece, should be eight or nine of them anyway, a minimum of eight, sometimes I think go up to 11, the Marching Skeletons. So they're a ska band, loads of horns, they're coming up from Brighton, and they all dress as skeletons, and they play like authentic Jamaican scatterlike style music, but as well as having like kind of a few really great covers that they perform beautifully and play exceptionally well, that really, they've really got the feel for it and really good players, but they also adapt like a couple of more, you know, some really well-known, more modern-day stuff.
Scatify it. Well.
And just totally turn around, which is what the ska people were doing back in the day anyway. So It's going to be a really good show. Two bands, they're only doing 45 minutes each. They got loads of material, and so they'll just really give a powerhouse set each.
Yeah.
And we're going to top and tail it with me at the beginning to help introduce it with half an hour of some great classic Gaz's Rocking Blues Club music from over the years. And my brother Jason, aka the Cumbia Kid, and he specializes in Colombian, like 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s music called Cumbia,
and
Poros, Gaitos. There's a bunch of music, but the most famous of its type would be the Cumbias, and they call him the Cumbia Kid. He's been over to Colombia many times through music, funny enough, not what you'd expect or imagine. And amassed a huge collection, scouring all the markets and secondhand record shops of this amazing music, and basically, virtually single-handedly introduce it to Britain and the rest of the world. So he's going to bring a great selection of that. He might sprinkle it with other stuff as well. He's got a full range of music, but I'm hoping he'll probably kind of lead more in that direction with his cumbias. And in the middle, in between the two bands, we've got Baby Soul, who DJed down the club for many, many years and still makes the odd appearance now, even though she's not based in London these days. So she's coming down for that. We were going to have Natty Bow, but he's...
Oh, yeah, I'm going to ask, yeah.
Because he's regular down the club each week. Yeah. But he's shielding his mother. His father just died right at the beginning of the COVID thing, was suspected... coronavirus.
Yeah.
Him and his missus Sarah Sarah de Vargas got married on the 8th of March, and his dad and mum were there holding court. It was a beautiful wedding, fantastic, spread over a few days, culminating with a big fun non-legal ceremony to seal it all off for all the friends who couldn't make the legal, the registry office. And we all met down at Valtaruni's and had a fantastic party and a surreal wedding take on it. Anyway, his dad was fine for all of that. Absolutely life and soul of the party. 2 weeks later, 2 days into lockdown, he was gone. No one even knew he was ill. And what did he die of? They said pneumonia. And I thought, come on. Anyway, so then his mother has been shielding because I don't think they even tested his body. Anyway, so Natty's been living now, looking after his mum and his new wife, Sarah. And so the three of them celebrated his birthday the other day down in Abbeywood at his mum's place. And they've been living there and just basically isolating still.
Yeah.
So he really wanted to do it. He was going to come. He was all lined up to do it. And then the last minute, he said, like, you know what, I've thought about it every which way. I just can't do it. He'd have to go into quarantine for a week or two after, and he just said, look, do you mind? And I said, look, of course not. Anyway, so I just happened to be with Baby Soul at the time, and I said, gave her a first shout. I said, well, do you want to do it? And she said, yeah, I'd love to. So she's going to bring down a fantastic selection of, real classic, kind of probably 50s and 60s stuff. She's really big on early soul and she's got rock and roll, she's got Jamaica, she's got all kinds of stuff. So I don't know, she said, oh, what shall I bring? Anything in particular? Shall I really, I said, look, and I said the same to Jason. I said, look, whatever you want to play, it just makes you go, yeah, put your hand to the sky and smile and just let it all hang out and let it all go and makes you feel like dancing your socks off, because we're not getting enough opportunities to do that at the moment.
No, I was in Leeds about a week ago, Gaz, and I saw a young guy there, a young plump lad, about mid-30s, with a microphone and a speaker behind him, and he was pumping out Angels by Robbie Williams and Mr. Brightside by The Killers and Look Back, Don't Look Back in Anger Oasis. And I stood there and I had fucking tears in my eyes because I'd forgotten just how much... how important it is to have a live somebody in front of you giving it.
And he was giving it loads.
I clapped him. I had my partner and I had my daughter who was a singer. We were standing outside Marks and Spencer, and they're right across about 50 yards away. And he had a little kind of menage of like about three or four 14-year-old girls there. They had all the words were like singing.
Yeah.
And there he was, and he was, come on, Lees, let's do it, you know. and I'm going, go on, lad.
Lovely.
But it's just, I've probably, yeah, we don't realise just how yeah. much love we
exude.
And just by the fact that we put something on, and it might not be to everybody's taste, but just the fact that you have these warriors out there on stage,
yeah,
just jumping into the void, and going, there we go,
and people, being a catalyst for what people want to do. They want to sing and shout and jump all about, and you know, you're just they need a bit of encouragement.
Yeah, all you're doing is winding them up. You're a starter.
Yeah,
you know, you do a certain amount, but there's sometimes when you could just your job's done,
yeah,
and they're still kind of going. Yeah, and I thought I've got to walk on stage now. And I could just disappear, and they're off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're basically flying away, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is like, I don't know. I mean, so
we need what else? Down at this theatre tonight.
Yeah.
That's from 8 until 11. There's us three DJs, two great bands, loads of brilliant music, giving it some to the camera. My brother's got this fantastic old 1960s. Circa 69-70 twin turntable console that used to belong to, I don't know if you remember him, Emperor Roscoe.
Oh my God, yeah.
Used to belong to him. And Bob Marley has actually DJed for 2 hours on those exact turntables.
Yeah. Oh, I remember Roscoe, he was amazing DJ.
So he's got that all up and running with its Garrard decks and everything. So we're setting that up tonight.
Yeah.
I'm going to go down there early afternoon, do all the sound checks, meet and greet, and tee it all up. And it's a nice area, apparently, all on canals and riverways. So I'm going to take in a little bit of the scenery and have a bite to eat. Get there early and that. So that's today. And then I don't know when the next gig is. I've got nothing else lined up. But I probably will still get a nice suit out, even if it's just for dinner.
Yeah.
Or just walking down the street. Makes people feel good when you kind of like dress for an occasion.
I've discovered the power of the iron, and just how you just give yourself an extra 10 minutes and do a nice job of your shirt. Because I used to just grab a shirt off the hook and then just slap it on. That's a nice shirt, bang. But then I'm thinking, well, I remember my mum would iron my dad's shirts, and then I think, I'm not doing that, it's too much. But I started ironing my shirts, I'm thinking, that looks nice now. And I feel a bit more expensive.
Yeah, yeah. I'll wait till you start ironing your hankies as well.
Oh, no, I won't be ironing my hankies.
Then you're like, you're really, really funny. Losing it. Anyway.
So, what have you been doing over the lockdown that you never expected to be doing, you know, that's maybe surprised you? Like,
well,
you know, sewing buttons or making bread or something.
Basically, as soon as I saw it coming on lockdown, I was like, Jesus. Because my brother lives in Italy, Ben, and they had it before we did. And by the time that they were talking about bringing it in here, you could see they were going to bring it in here. And it was just how and to what extent. By that time, in Italy, it was so serious that my brother couldn't even leave the house.
Yeah, yeah.
Without a piece of paper to prove why he's leaving the house.
Yeah.
And I know they're an ex-fascist country, and they took it to another level. But at that point, we were still doing Chelmsford, we were still doing
Cheltenham.
Cheltenham.
And Liverpool were playing there. Italians came over, yeah.
And I was at the Tate Modern with 400 people drinking champagne, going to the launch of the Andy Warhol exhibition. Which I'm not complaining about. I would have loved to have gone to Cheltenham for the Gold Cup this year. I've been once before, it was great. And I wouldn't be, for me, I would let it kind of just ride through me and society and protect those if necessary. And I've got different views on it, different take. And I don't really like what it's doing to the country. And I'm not exactly a conspiracy theorist, but I just thought I'm not doing, like most things in my life, I'm not doing it the way that I'm officially told to do it the whole time. I'll do some of it like that, but I'm not doing all of it like that. Mm-hmm. And if you want to criminalise me for it, well then I'm going to probably get into trouble, because being told I could only walk 50 yards down the road if I didn't have a dog, and that's just the nearest shop, and that's not a good enough reason for me to
be indoors.
And also, yeah, I'm a social animal. I would have gone mad. I probably would have been on that list of suicides or something if I'd had to spend the first 3 months on my own here. I don't have a girlfriend and missus at the moment, and I would have been on my own in here. And even the cemetery behind me there, where you could see someone having a little walk around and someone running, they closed that for 4 or 5 months because they didn't want people going to use it socially, because they closed so many of the parks in London.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, Jesus, not having that. So anyway, when I saw it coming on, I heard that Whites of St. James was closing for 3 months. Mate of mine who's a member, it's the oldest club in London, and it's been going for hundreds and hundreds of years, and it's never closed in its entire history, not even for a single day during World War II, as bombs were raining down.
Yeah.
So when my mate the Colonel said, look, White's is closing for 3 months, I'm like, I've got to get out of here now, because if White's is closing for 3 months, it means the whole country is closed for 3 months.
Yeah.
And if they're telling the population on TV, we're doing this for 3 weeks and then review it, I thought, you lying bastards. No, you're not. You know that you're doing it for 3 months. Yeah. Don't give me that shit. So I thought, I can't do this. And I'm not going to do as I'm told and stay here and do that. So I packed all my stuff and I got out of town. And I was going to go down to Devon to stay with friends down there, but then the people around Devon, they'd invited a bunch of friends, and then a couple that had one had had cancer and one had got issues with his heart and stuff, and they didn't want to burden the locals, the local NHS, the doctors with that. And so they thought, rather than just you can come and you can't, they said, look, we're going to cancel everything, because like their gardeners and stuff were like of the local opinion that they didn't want kind of people coming up from London or a fire there who might be carrying things, because it was all quite unknown at the moment. And what was is it going to be the plague? Are we all going to get wiped out? Yeah. And so then I called up my mate Bez from the Happy Mondays. I said, Bez, I've got to get out of town. He says, for lockdown, so it's going to be, could be a few months this. And he says, come here for lockdown, Gaz. Got your caravan. Anyway, so I've been up there the whole time.
Where does Bez live then? Manchester?
He does have somewhere in there to stay when he's working, but for a long time now he's been living on the Welsh borders.
All right.
With his missus. Yeah. And they've got a lovely place, completely off grid. You can only get there from a dirt track.
Yeah.
And I've been having a great time there. We've got our own like Caribbean bar shack sort of thing in the garden.
Yeah.
Campfire, it's like Glastonbury, like, but the day after when all the bands are gone and stuff, and it's been like that with just the family, and he's got a couple of other people who live there permanently. So there's been like a mini community, less than 10 of us, but still, it's better than one person stuck in your flat here going nuts.
You're privileged. You've got plenty going on there if you've got 10 people.
Great company. And down there, they're not so stressed about, because they had such a low incidence rate around there of the COVID. And you just didn't notice it the same way. When I had to come back to London like three months in to sort plants out and mail and bits and bobs, got back here, I thought it was like coming to a sort of the post-zombie apocalypse sort of thing.
Yeah.
And there was only one place that I know, which I can't tell you what it is on here, but that basically swerved all the rules and had a sense of normality, but there it was just had to be ultra private sort of, only kind of as good as family and immediate friends first, the regulars. But most places, it was just so wrong and depressing, so I couldn't wait to get back to the hills. And what I've been doing in that time, I've been helping out in the garden. So my favourite new tool isn't a guitar or drumsticks or anything. It's these really long sectaires. Yeah, you go around it, secateurs, and you know, one thing I've been having like such
what,
great
trimming
fun
the, trimming the edge of the lawn.
No, I've been getting rid of all the brambles. Overrun the place. So yeah, now they, you know, Leo, Bez's younger son, who's 11, said the garden's never looked so good in the 5 years they've been living there.
So are you a natural gardener?
Well, I used to live in Wales in the mountains, but I was more of an antique dealer there. But I did have a kitchen garden out the back, and I did use to plant things. I cut all the poles from the woods, and you know, for the beans, runner beans and stuff. And yeah, you know, I did love that, but I haven't had this amount of time
to do that.
To do my, you know, ordinary country pursuits, like, you know, fishing, hunting and gardening and getting rid of nettles and brambles and, you know, planting veg, you know, preparing vegetable patches and planting and seeing them come to fruition over the months. And, you know, now we're coming into the apple season, we're going to make a load of homemade apple juice and cider. We've been having a wonderful time there. So yeah, I haven't had this amount of time in a garden since, or you know, in the countryside since I was a teenager in Wales.
Yeah. Well, it's a bit like being a little boy again, because yeah, you've got time to sort of just kind of do the things you like and kind of dawdle and drift.
Yeah. And I had all these books to read. I took a little mini library of all these books I'm determined to read.
Are you reading them?
I haven't read one.
No, I haven't. Been
outdoors the whole time.
I thought because there's this, like, nothing happening, I've got a selection of books. And I brought three with me down to London from Leeds. And yeah, they're not. I've got History of Northern Comedy about people like Dan Leno and George Formby and this, that and the other, which I'm reading up in Leeds a little bit, but I brought it down here and it's like I'm too busy because there's all you, you know, diamonds blinding me. So I've got to kind of get on and talk to you. And
yeah, well, you know, what we're missing a lot of is social interaction, and that's what's been suppressed.
I gave my daughter a hug, sort of, or she hugged me, and I've got two daughters and I've got a son, and I've got one daughter who's up in Dewsbury, and I didn't hug her. I just kind of, I gave her the elbow, and it was so hard. And I come down here to Highgate to visit my brother, and my son and daughter were in this little Italian restaurant, and they both stood up, and my daughter just came up and just come here, and she just grabbed me, and I held on to her for about like 5 minutes, you know, and I'm just the pleasure of having a loved one in your arms.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. And then my son that grabbed him, you know, and then that was it. We sat down, got our dinner sorted and stuff. But it's just so. I mean, mother's up in Otley, and I've not given her a hug, you know, and it's really strange, you know. There's a bit of me that's thinking, well, am I just being a compliant, and am I just being, you know, a brainless drone and just kind of accepting stuff? But there's a bit of me that's thinking, well, maybe I just have to be careful and be an adult in the room, you know.
Get that in one of your songs, brainless drone.
Yeah.
When you're in a really bad mood.
So what's your, so you're you're doing your gardening.
Yeah, well, I was supposed to be writing, like, I was thinking I'd write a lot, and, you know, like, autobiography, I thought maybe it's time for that. Brought stacks of paper to do that, and books, and, you know, paper books to write in, and not written a page, not even made notes. I've really enjoyed the opportunity to do, you know, I'll tell you one thing I did with Brilliant, which some people are going to hate me for, probably call the RSPCA. I learnt to shoot pheasants with a bow and arrow.
Right, okay.
And only got three, but, you know, I tell you, I've been on pheasant shoots, proper shoots, you know, with guns and everything. And the last few years, I've been at least once every year on a mate shoot. But there's something primeval about this. It's a different technique and it's a different result, and so that's been really good. And yeah, you know, kind of you shoot an animal and the one you've got there, you know, wring its neck, you hang it, you pluck it, prepare it, you cook it on an open fire.
Yeah.
And when you eat that, you know, it's like you come full circle with a thing, and then throw the bones out to whoever else is going to get that. and you kind of, I don't know, you're just going back through millennia of kind of like human existence since we were back from the dawn of time.
I understand. I
mean, and I've really been just going back to my core and almost like, what do you call it, rebooting myself.
Yeah.
You know, just taking it right back to the bottom.
Taking stock of yourself.
Yeah, and digesting 40 years of being in the rat race when I just haven't had a chance to do nothing else but kind of like battling on to what's next, and get, is this ready? Is that spinning plates and all the rest of it? And just catching up with stuff and being ready for the next thing. So I've actually, you know, it's been kind of pressure off.
So maybe that was a good thing that sort of, you know, you haven't written your book and you haven't read these books. And maybe it's just like, you know, Gaz Mail's having a holiday.
Yeah, well, because my mum says it's the least stress she's seen me in donkey's years.
Yeah.
So you know,
that's a good thing, you know.
It is a good thing. Because now I'm kind of reevaluating kind of like exactly which approach to take. I've got my batteries recharged. And some things I'm going to do less of and some things I'm going to do more of.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at spreading my wings because I realise I've been missing the country and I really kind of need to have a base in London, but I also really need to have a base in the country. I can't just be one or the other because otherwise it's staying in London. If I didn't have, if I don't spread out to the country now, even if it's just staying at mates and visiting various friends or whatever, if I don't make sure that I've got enough of that to balance me out, it'll make me a worse person and also it'll kill me a lot earlier.
Yeah.
I've seen you tired.
I've seen you at festivals, and I've seen you. Because you know, you give off this. I'm walking Duracell battery. But there's times that I've seen. I thought, God, you know, and you've looked tired. You know, and I understand I'm cut from a similar cloth, and I find it hard to kind of
sit down
and smell the roses. But I'm having to sort of do that. My brother Joe, he's a similar case. He's very, very busy gigging around the pubs and stuff and that, and he's always got his diary there, where can I play next that? And since this lockdown, he said, well, I just realised what a fool I've been. I mean, what I've been chasing at all. You know, I do have to do 3-4 gigs a weekend and a couple during the week. I've got other things I'm doing. Why can I not just, you know, I'm an old guy now, I'm 61, whatever, and I'm going to kill myself if I don't just stop and just think, well, there is something else I want to do. I need to go off and just go and get on a boat and I just get out in the middle and just row for 20 minutes and just look up at the sky just lie back and get me a little bloody podcast on or something and listen to Wuthering Heights. Why the hell not? Because we can't be kind of like major generals all the time, you know. No. There has to be a case where you just can still do that,
but
it's just being kind of choosing your battles, I think.
Anyway,
guys, it's been lovely talking to you.
Likewise.
And I'm just going to finish off.
As always.
I'm going to ask you, can you recommend an album for this week, for the last week of August? Something
Because traditionally you've got Notting Hill Carnival, which has always been a big fixture of my annual calendar. And that will be the 30th and the 31st. It's always the last Monday, being the bank holiday at the end of August. So that'll include that. So I've got to think of an album that would really, really kind of draw me back to kind of like Carnival. So first moving to Notting Hill and falling in love with kind of everything that Notting Hill is kind of shared and epitomised in a carnivalesque black music, West Indians in London, influence on the whole country and the whole country's music. And at the time when I just moved around here, it was 1970. And let me pick an album from around then. Okay, here you go. Reggae Chartbusters Volume 2.
Oh, gosh!
With Liquidator and Elizabethan
and
Reggae.
And all. Reggae Chartbusters.
You know, it was a kind of silver kaleidoscope thing on the cover.
Because they had like they had something similar, Motown as well, used to do like reggae. My God, thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Gaz, for joining us today. Gaz's club has just reopened after closing in March 2020, so get down to Gaz's Rocking Blues at the St Moritz in Soho. There's live music every Thursday. There's a new double album of 50s and 60s music on the Stagger Lee label titled Gaz's Rocking Blues 40th Anniversary Special, full of rock and roll, blues and soul. You can pick up a copy at the club for £20. Details can also be found on his website, gazrocking.com, or Instagram at gazmail, or Twitter at Gaz's Rocking Blues. You can listen to this again and download the podcast on iTunes, Mick Artistic's Ego Podcast. Further links can be found on our website, mickartistic.com. Cheers to all of you people who keep tuning in. And don't forget to tell your mates and your nearest and dearest. And if you like what you hear, give us a review on iTunes. It's early days, so we need all the listeners we can get. Fly, you beauties, fly. Bye.